Beets are a great source of nitric oxide, and you can get the benefits of 3 whole beets in just 1 teaspoon of Super Beets without the beet taste. No fuss, no muss. It's a great way to get your nitric oxide in your bloodstream elevated. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we have a very interesting guest who has a unique perspective on something that plagues many of us. It's allergies, but allergies construed in kind of a narrow way, you know, a little nasal congestion, a little wheezing, itching, some minor swelling, but allergies can be a pervasive cause of a lot of problems. And I came across the writings of this talented individual in a magazine that I subscribe to called The Original Internist. It's a place where you can find innovative articles about a variety of subjects. And his article is entitled Genetic Variants That Seriously Impact Digestion in the Gut by Creating Histamine and Zonulin. We know what histamine is, but in a moment you're going to find out what zonulin is. Dr. Robert Miller is a certified traditional naturopath, and he's an expert on complex biochemical pathways that affect our health. And he has a very, very profound understanding of how nutrient pathways and our genetics have an impact on histamine production and leaky gut. And I wanted to share that perspective with our listening audience today. So welcome, Dr. Miller. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Quite the pleasure to be here. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so well, first of all, help us out with some definitions here. Talk to us about histamine. What goes on when histamine runs amok in our bodies?
Well, first let's talk about histamine being somewhat something we need. It wears a couple of hats in the human body, and it helps regulate immune response, digestion, inflammation, sexual function, blood pressure, vasodilation, muscle contraction, and neuromodulation. And those are good things that it does. But unfortunately, sometimes it gets too high, and as you said, when it runs amok. So what happens is we create histamine, and then we have to break it down as well. And sometimes we're either producing too much histamine, or we don't have the ability to break it down due to multiple factors that we'll talk about in a little bit.
So we could use a sort of a bathtub analogy. It's like if your bathtub is overflowing, you know, two things you could do. One is pull the plug and, you know, let the water out, you know, drain it. And the other is turn off the faucet. But histamine Absolutely. Works that way too. And possibly for some people who are overloaded with histamine, the faucet's running too high, and at the same time they're not draining the bathtub.
Absolutely great analogy. So you ask the question, you know, what happens when it runs amok? And let me just first say, as a, you know, traditional naturopath, I've been doing this for a long time, and I was stunned when I started studying the methylation pathways and saw histamine, how so many conditions that people have are actually related to this high histamine. I'm just going to give you a couple of them. Abdominal cramps, bronchoconstriction, difficulty breathing and asthma, even heartburn and acid reflux. For many people, it's just inflammation throughout the whole body, low muscle tone, throat tightening, chest pain, hypertension, hypotension, arthritis, nasal congestion, skin flushing and itching, even anxiety, constipation, fatigue, irritable bowel, depression, even your ability for memory and learning, nauseousness, sleep problems, diarrhea, headaches and migraines. And of course, the typical things we think of with histamine is the itchy and watery eyes. And the reason I kept those for last, because I wanted to point out that it does so much more, even can affect estrogen dominance, vertigo and dizziness. So it's a whole lot more than just itchy eyes and watery conditions inside the body. It can be very pervasive and create a myriad of problems.
And that takes in a very large percentage of our listeners, probably one or another of those complaints may be familiar to you or a loved one. So is there a way of determining if histamine is your problem?
Well, there is. There are, of course, blood tests you can do that measure whole histamine. But if you have some of those conditions, there's a couple of things you can do. And one of the things I ask my clients when I see them is, what happens if you have a glass of wine? And many people say, oh, gosh, I can't do that because I blush, I get all red, I might even get hives. And, of course, hives is another indication of histamine. And sometimes just through genetic testing, and we'll talk about it later, we can determine if that's the cause. And as I said, I've been stunned by how many people have the problem. Till a couple of years ago, I just thought of it as, oh, yeah, springtime, allergies, sure, you get a histamine response. We all knew that. But as I learned all the things that it does and how many things it contributes to, I would say when clients come to my office, probably about 1 out of 8 or 10 has a histamine problem, and affecting them in ways that we never even anticipated would be a histamine problem.
Well, so let's talk about the faucet for a moment, you know, things that bring up histamine levels. And, I showed this article to my nutritionist, and she said, yeah, this is great, because she puts people sometimes on a low histamine diet. And foods can impact histamine in a couple of ways. Some foods actually literally deliver histamine into the system, and others have a histamine-inducing effect. So maybe share with us that perspective that you outlined very nicely.
Sure. Well, firstly, there's histamine-rich foods, and of course, we spoke about alcohol. Then there's your smoked
meats. Particularly red wine, it seems. So perhaps less the clear beverages?
Yeah, it appears as though red wine, but even beer has some. Mm-hmm. And then some smoked meats, pickled foods, aged cheeses, and even some walnuts and cashews. Those are the ones that have histamine in them. Then there's other foods that actually liberate the histamine from our own mast cells. And for some folks, that's citrus, chocolate, avocados, strawberries, and tomatoes. And we'll talk a little bit later about the DAO enzyme. That's what actually breaks down histamine. And there's some foods that will actually inhibit the enzyme that actually breaks down the histamine. Again, alcohol, some black tea, green tea, cocoa, and various medications are the DAO inhibitors.
So in other words, this would be the plug in the drain that if the plug is stuck, then the bathtub doesn't drain. So these are foods that may inhibit an enzyme that helps to break down the excess histamine.
Exactly, because we make histamine, as we said, it's needed for many functions. Sometimes we make too much, and then other times there's genetic issues where we don't degrade it or break it down. And for many people, they have both, and that's where they're in this merry-go-round, so to speak, that just keeps going and going and feeding upon itself and making them sicker and sicker.
So how often do you find in your clinical practice that simply administering a diet? Now, I know there are a lot of things, and I would be really bereft if I came to see you and you told me I had to stop eating chocolate because that's a mainstay of my diet. But say you see someone and they're itchy inexplicably, and they take antihistamines and they don't work, and now they have to go on steroids. You probably see those types of end-stage histamine-loaded patients. They say, well, try the diet. Does that work in some cases?
Well, keep in mind, as traditional naturopaths, we're usually the last stop for people.
Yeah.
They're not sure if we're quacks or not, but they're desperate because nothing else has worked.
Right. In other words, they hear that, well, there's this guy, and he's not an MD, and he's a little weird, but he seems to get a lot of people better, so I guess I better head on over to his office.
Sure. So we see a lot of people that are in serious distress. We see folks who nothing else has worked. They're desperate for help. So they're willing to just about try anything. For many of those people, diet alone is not enough. And we'll talk about this later. Many times they have genetic variants where they don't make enough of what's called methylfolate and SAMe-acetylmethionine, which is needed to break it down. And then they might even have some problems with the genes that break it down. And we call it the proverbial perfect storm. Mm-hmm. So they've got to do food alterations as well, because we have a dietitian on our staff here at Tree of Life, but many times they have to work on the methylation pathways, support the DAO by props, possibly even taking that DAO enzyme with foods and then working on breaking down that excess histamine.
So, okay, now you've introduced a new term, which is DAO. And what's interesting about DAO, and I have to confess, I just, you know, learned about DAO in the last couple of years. And I think our modern understanding of DAO doesn't go back very far, maybe just in the early 2000s. We began to realize its importance. What is DAO?
Well, it's an enzyme for the metabolism of histamine. And what it does, it just catabolizes it or breaks it down to prevent its uptake into the blood. And there's a lot of it in the intestinal mucosa, thymus, and other places. And we need to make it. And sometimes we have genetic issues that we don't make enough of that. And then consequently, even if we don't have an overproduction of histamine, we still have too much histamine. It's worth repeating, we can either be making too much or not breaking it down, or both.
Well, you say that some of the DAO resides logically enough in the intestine, which is where it really should do its job to reduce allergic reactions in the gut. But could certain gastrointestinal problems like candida or celiac disease or food allergies cause the intestinal mucosa to not function well and not produce enough DAO?
Absolutely. Excellent question. And unfortunately, that's what happens for many people. For many people, their gut is literally on fire and they don't know what to do. Because, for example, they can have other genetic issues where they don't make the prebiotics, so they have the proper probiotics. So then they get the yeast, the candida, all the issues that go with that. Then there's genetic issues that people don't break down gluten. That further compounds it because gluten makes the problem even worse. And then if you have issues that we'll talk about in a little bit, the MTHFR, where you don't have enough folate. Folate is the necessary ingredient to rebuild the cells. So now you're damaging the cells, you're irritating them, and you can't rebuild them. So your gut is literally on fire. And then you eventually move to what's called leaky gut, and we can talk about that a little bit as to how that can lead to, you know, various very serious things like autoimmune disease.
Before we get on to MTHFR and leaky gut and zonulin, of interest is that there are actually now supplements of DAO. You can actually buy DAO. It's diamine oxidase. A variety of companies make the DAO. And
yes.
It is claimed by some that you can sort of allergy-proof yourself by taking DAO. What's been your finding with that?
Well, for those who have just minimal problem with DAO, it's been a lifesaver for them, and they can eat some of the foods they couldn't eat before, and they've seen substantial improvement in their health. But for those that are that perfect storm that have a lot going on, it's just a piece of a multifaceted approach that you have to take.
So in other words, it's just a palliative. It's just a, you know, it's like, you know, putting a little few drops of water on a fire. It's not going to put it out.
Absolutely. Well, again, if it's that low case, if they just have a little bit of an issue, it might be all that you need.
Okay. And so heads up to our listeners. Do you have a particular brand that you recommend? There are a variety of brands out there, or are they mostly equivalent? How much does one have to take?
There's a couple out there. In our clinic, we use the Swanson brand, but I don't have any particular affinity with them and don't know that there are others that aren't just as good. Mm-hmm. And so for those who have a little bit of a histamine problem, and they don't have to take it all the time, you can get a list of histamine foods. And then when you have a histamine food, because some people just don't want to give it up. They just like, nope, I like my foods and I'm going to eat them. So if I have to take this enzyme with it, I'll do that rather than give it up. And that works for some individuals.
So you could take it as sort of a as-needed allergy blocker. You don't have to take it day in and day out.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, but obviously, you know, and you seem to take on really challenging cases, and, you know, you're very brainy about figuring out how to get past some of these roadblocks. The MTHFR genetic polymorphism, which is kind of a pattern of it's not necessarily a disease or a mutation, but it's just a variation on the theme, is part and parcel of this. We talked before to our listeners about MTHFR and how that may dictate higher intake of certain methylated B vitamins, methylfolate, methyl B12, B6, and others. So how does that enter into the allergy equation?
Sure. Let me first mention that a lot of people are now learning about MTHFR. And you can do cheek swabs, or you do the 23andMe, or, you know, blood tests. And many people are finding out they have MTHFR. Many physicians are now learning about MTHFR, and they're starting to test it. And I would encourage everyone, if you find out you have MTHFR, just don't assume that all you have to do is take some methylfolate.
Right.
I instruct doctors all the time. I teach classes for physicians as to how to approach this methylation. And what I always tell them is don't just measure MTHFR and give them methylfolate or Deplin or something else, because I've seen people in my office that physicians have actually put in the emergency room due to giving them too much methylfolate too soon.
Right.
So although MTHFR is becoming a buzzword and everybody's checking for it, I personally, after doing this for years, don't think it is as big an issue as we've made it to be. We need to look at it, but you have to look at hundreds of genes and how they interact with each other. Because 30% of the population has one copy of MTHFR, which is a polymorphism, and I should explain what happens, is folic acid that comes from our diet. And by the way, folic acid is an artificial vitamin made back in the 1940s.
Right.
Doesn't occur anywhere in nature. People are surprised by that. And through various steps, the folate receptor site, the DHFR gene, the MTHFS, and SHMT have to then prepare the folate so MTHFR can turn it into that final state of methylfolate. And if you have these variants, folic acid never makes it down to methylfolate. And methylfolate is what the body needs for all of the purposes like pregnancy and rebuilding your cells and doing all the things that folate's important for.
It's the so-called body-ready form of, we call it, a folate, which is in nature. We find it in nature as well.
Sure.
In foliage and in liver and other natural sources.
Absolutely. But we've been putting it in way too many supplements, and I think we've been putting it in way too many foods. And it's an area of debate, but there are some people that think if you have too many MTHFR variants along the way, folic acid could actually be unmetabolized folic acid and be a toxin for you.
Yeah, let's speak to that issue because, I'd like to hear your opinion. This has led me to, reformulate my multivitamin. You know, I dutifully created a balanced multivitamin in the late 1990s that we've used for a long time. And then along came this new paradigm, which suggests that we might actually be doing patients harm by loading them up with B complex that contains a lot of folic acid, or loading them up with multis that have folic acid. So what's your take on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, it even gets more complicated because although folic acid might be helpful for some people, for those who have MTHFR, DHFR, FOLR, the folic acid might actually become a toxin to them. So we've gone to the other extreme now of putting methylfolate in everything. But this is like a 3D chess game, because although we need methylfolate, what makes it more complicated is that some people have genetic variants that don't use methyl groups that should. For example, there's a gene that makes creatine, which is needed for muscle strength. And if people have that genetic issue, they're not using methyl groups for that purpose. There's another gene called COMT that breaks down your dopamine.
Right.
When
Which
people
could
have,
actually cause, a, if you have a variation in that, you can get a backfire when you take methylating agents.
Absolutely. So many times, that's why I teach doctors, you can't just throw methylfolate at people that have MTHFR.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look and see if they have COMT, GAMT, and for some of those folks, you may actually have to give very small amounts or combine it with niacin or calm down other things first before you put that in.
Right. This is actually one of the observations of some of, and I don't treat autism anymore because I think it's a very complex issue and really requires somebody to specialize in it day in and day out. And I treat a lot of adult patients, so autism is no longer my focus. But some of my colleagues in the autism field say, you know, we did this methylfolate thing because we tested kids and we found they had variants, the MTHFR. So we loaded them up with methylfolate and we thought we'd make them talk and make them, more social. But instead, they were off the wall.
Yes.
And that COMT variant may explain that. I'm not entirely sure the complex biochemistry by which that occurs. Probably you're familiar with it, but it's an example of the law of unintended consequences. Sometimes things that seem salutary backfire because you don't have the whole picture.
Sure, and I learned that by the school hard knocks, by the way.
So, yeah,
because
okay.
I did that. Just two quick things: what happens when you give methylfolate? You can spin the cycles too fast, and you get too much glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter, and I've seen that most autistic children have way too much glutamate, and particularly they may not turn that glutamate into the relaxing neurotransmitter GABA. And then secondarily, folate stimulates phase one liver detox, and if they're low in glutathione, the master antioxidant, they'll actually start to get inflamed. So you've got to make sure phase two liver detox is going. You got to make sure that the transsulfurization pathway is working properly before you even begin to think about putting folate in.
Okay, it's all sounding very complicated. We're going to try and pull some of these disparate issues together in part two of today's podcast. Our subject is histamine and its relationship to allergies, but much more because, as our guest today, Dr. Robert Miller, suggests, this is sort of like a 3D chess game, and you have to be aware of multiple factors when you're working with patients who have complex food intolerances, environmental intolerances, gut problems. They all seem to hang together. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and please join us for part two of our discussion with Dr. Robert Miller about histamine and DAO and zonulin and methylation issues when we return.